Meyer, and thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight, Black Voices. I'm Brandis Friedman. Here's what we're looking at. Stateville workers push back on the prison's pending closure as transfers for incarcerated men are already underway.
You might actually not go home. You might actually die in prison.
Plus, how men in prison are hoping to change the way they can be released before their sentence ends. And highlighting the history of Negro League baseball in a new exhibit. And now to some of today's top stories. Cook County State's attorney is calling the shooting deaths of four people while riding the blue line on the CTA a, quote, horrific, heinous, and inexplicable act of violence. The man charged in the shooting, 30-year-old Ronnie Davis, was ordered to be detained during a bond hearing today. Prosecutors say surveillance video shows Davis walking up to the victims on the train in West Suburban Forest Park and shooting them in the head, face, or abdomen while three of them were sleeping. Violence interrupters say they're asking CTA to allow them to conduct outreach work aboard the trains.
CTA has a history, a long history, where you have many, many assaults, rapes. You had women raped on CTA trains, muggings on a regular basis on the CTA trains. What we're saying, if we hire, deploy 100 violence interrupters to work these trains and begin taking on some of these high-risk individuals as high-risk clients and work with them and show them how to change their behavior when it comes down to violence.
Georgia officials say a 14-year-old boy is the suspect in a high school shooting that killed two students and two teachers. It happened this morning at Appalachie High School in Georgia, about 50 miles east of Atlanta. Nine other victims were taken to hospitals with injuries. Students were sent scrambling for shelter in their classrooms. Local Sheriff Judd Smith became emotional when addressing reporters, saying the shooting hits home for him as he's a product of the school system that his children attend today.
I went to school in this school system. My kids go to this school system. I'm proud of this school system. My heart hurts for these kids. My heart hurts for our community. But I want to make it very clear that hate will not prevail.
The Georgia Bureau of Investigation says two school resource officers were able to take the suspect into custody within minutes. He's being tried as an adult. Advocates are calling on City Council to address access to child care by funding higher wages for workers. Today's hearing comes after the closure of a center in Bronzeville.
We hear from child care center workers and family child care providers who can't afford to support their families, who are stressed and saddened by seeing the consequences of turnover and understaffing, many of whom ultimately and or reluctantly make the choice to leave a job they love.
An SEIU report says low wages for childcare workers are forcing centers to close classrooms and says the shortage leaves more than 78,000 children without access to licensed care. It says the city would need an additional 16,000 to 19,000 providers to meet current needs. Up next, how the Stateville prison closure is affecting people on the inside. That's right after this.
Chicago Tonight, Black Voices, is made possible in part by the support of these donors.
Workers are pushing back on the pending closure of Stateville Correctional Center near Joliet. Employees rallied last week outside the facility, which is slated to close by the end of the month. The Illinois Department of Corrections has already begun transferring more than 100 men to other facilities. Advocates are raising concerns about the location of these facilities and the impact they'll have on those behind the wall, as well as the employees. Joining us now with more are Anders Lindahl, Public Affairs Director at AFSCME Council 31, which represents roughly 10,000 employees who work in Illinois prisons. Jennifer Vollen-Katz, Executive Director of the John Howard Association of Illinois. And on Zoom, Christina Rivers, director of DePaul University's Institute for Restorative Educational Engagement. Thanks to all three of you for joining us. Anders Lindahl, let's start with you, please. We know that IDOC has already started transferring men out of Stateville to other facilities around the state. What are your members saying about this expedited transfer process so far?
So hundreds of employees from Stateville were out on an informational picket line last week, and their message was clear. No chaos and no layoffs. But the headlong rush by the department into this process to empty out Stateville, to reclassify the incarcerated population, to send them up to hundreds of miles away to medium security, even minimum security facilities, is actually causing that chaos and creating the disruption that should have been avoided. More than 70% of the individuals incarcerated at Stateville are from the Chicago area. They're now being sent 200, 300 miles away, making it much more difficult for visitation. We're going to hear, I think, about from Christina how the great educational programming at Stateville is being undermined. And, of course, nearly 500 jobs for AFSCME members who are an excellent workforce that provides that rehabilitative programming, education, healthcare, and more at Stateville is being threatened.
Have those workers been given any sense or notification about where they will be located or transferred to as far as working goes?
Throughout, there has been assurances from the department that there will be employment available, but they have not offered a lot of specifics. And they have often said, well, maybe it would be in Sheridan, or maybe it would be in Pontiac, which is an hour or more away from Stateville. The majority of Stateville employees actually live in Cook County. They don't live in Will County. So they're already driving 45 minutes on a good day, Chicago traffic, worse than that, just to get to work, then work 8 hours behind the wall and drive back home. 16 hours if you have to work a double shift. And if you're having to do that while driving 2 hours each way, that is not acceptable.
And Stateville is the closest to Chicago, obviously.
Yes,
anything
by far.
That's not Stateville, it's going to be longer than that hour and change.
Right.
Jennifer, the John Howard Association, you all have done numerous reports over the years in the past outlining the conditions in Stateville. What's your reaction to the decision to finally empty out, to close Stateville and rebuild it?
Look, I think the most important thing is the health and well-being of the people who are incarcerated and the people who work at Stateville. And it's been made abundantly clear, both by the John Howard Association reports and more recently by the CGL report, the independent contractor that did a full infrastructure assessment of all of the Illinois state prisons. Stateville is not a safe place to be. There is plaster falling from the ceiling. There's bird excrement. The conditions are inhumane and unsafe. And so while there is complexity to emptying out the facility, there's also good reason to be doing that. And transferring people is something IDOC does every single day. And reclassifying and reviewing where people should be, what's appropriate, is also something they do every day. And I understand that Stateville benefits from community resources and its proximity to Chicago, and it has had the most post-secondary educational opportunities of any prison in the state of Illinois, which is wonderful. But you don't keep people in unsafe conditions for that. You expand programming to the other facilities.
The IDOC, they claim that rebuilding will take 3 to 5 years. Let's just say 5 years. Mm-hmm. Is that a realistic timeline to rebuild Stateville, an entire prison?
You know, I was thinking about it, and I was trying to think about the timeline for the facility most recently built in Illinois, which was the Joliet Inpatient Treatment Center, which was built due to...
Which is next door to Stateville.
It is. It's close by. It looks to me, if I piece the timeline together from the IDOC announcement to shovels in the ground to opening the doors, it looked to me to be about 4 years, 4.5 years. So 5 years may be realistic. It's hard to know.
Christina Rivers, tell us briefly, if you would, about the programming that you work to provide the men who are incarcerated in Stateville.
So DePaul runs the Inside Out Prison Exchange Program, and we bring traditional campus-based students into carceral spaces such as Stateville and Cook County Jail, and we offer courses to combined groups of students there. We've been doing this since about 2012. I also supervise or coordinate a law and policy think tank that grew out of the course that I teach there on law and politics that's been running very steadily since about 2016 or so. We usually meet twice a month, sometimes once a week in the summer.
And what has IDOC told you about the status of that programming once the men are no longer in Stateville and have been scattered to different facilities around the state?
Well, we've requested to keep our cohorts together, those who are in the think tank, because it's been an ongoing project for several years. To our understanding, they're doing their best to keep that cohort together. But we have noticed that several of the men in our cohort have been transferred to other institutions, some at the request of those folks who are in different programs, but others were not sure why. And the closest location that we've been offered is at Hill, which I think is also Galesburg Correctional Center, which is about 3 hours away. That would, of course, make it much more difficult for us to run our programming, particularly to recruit outside students who would have the time in their schedule and faculty to basically do a six-hour round-trip course to take classes out there. We're committed to making this work, but that's what we're dealing with right now.
So obviously some challenges if this gets confirmed for you. Anders, you all are advocating for a different plan rather than closing the facility altogether. What is that?
We've thought that all along, the building of a new Stateville is a good thing and is necessary due to the years of neglected and deferred maintenance at the facility. Jennifer made reference to some of that. I'm not sure that the conditions are quite as bad as she stated. Our members are working there 24/7, and they would not want to be working somewhere that was a threat to their well-being. But the Department of Corrections has said, look, it's going to cost $400 to $500 million to build a new facility. And it would cost $12 to $30 million to do the emergency maintenance that's needed now. That amount seems like a pittance. Let's do that emergency maintenance that's needed now. We can keep Stateville open so that Christina can provide her services, members can have their jobs, people can be close to their families, and build the new Stateville next door. Then when it's completed, we can move over seamlessly without all this disruption.
Build it next door, you're referring to the thousand or so acres that are on the property.
Exactly.
that are sitting empty. Yeah. Jennifer, is that feasible considering that a federal judge has said the conditions are uninhabitable, move everybody out?
Well, right. It's no longer feasible. This is no longer a calculation by the Illinois Department of Corrections. A judge intervened and ruled that that the facility should be emptied by the end of this month. So it doesn't really, the conversation about whether it should happen or not is a little bit moot because it is going to happen based on a court order. But I disagree that the conditions are not as bad as maybe I previously stated, and that the staff wouldn't want to go to work there if they were as bad. I mean, I have talked to many people inside that facility over many years, and it is a dangerous place to walk into simply based on the conditions of that facility. And I've talked to many men in that facility who have told me that they would rather transfer to a different facility for their health and safety and well-being than stay there because of the programming. It's unclear how many unique individuals actually benefit from the programming at Stateville, and it's something we need to consider in this conversation.
Anders, I want to give you a quick second to respond, and then I want to get Christina in before we run out of time.
Just quickly, I do think we need to consider the impact on other facilities as well. These receiving facilities are severely, in some cases dangerously, understaffed already. And what is the impact on the ability of those facilities to maintain safety for the incarcerated population and for the employees?
Christina Rivers, if you would, we've got about a minute left. The significance of being able to provide, I apologize, the significance of being able to provide the programming that the men receive in Stateville, and why that's useful to them, why you do that.
Well, it's well documented that college and other types of programming reduce violence in prisons, and that it reduces recidivism on the part of those when they're released. That's well documented. I also want to add that Stateville is, you know, I have seen signs of that it is really decrepit. So I do think it is a place that needs to come down. I'm on the thread, on the needle there. It's hard to figure out how to do so without harming the positive programming that happens there. You have civic engagement there. I often joke that for every one person who's taking a class, about five other people are taking one. Family members have reported, you know, their kids being encouraged to go to college or to go back to school. So there's really broad ripple
example
effects.
And once those people learn, they're probably sharing it with other people that they are incarcerated with and their families as well. That's where we'll have to leave it, a conversation that we will keep having, obviously, as this continues. Christina Rivers, Anders Lindahl, Jenny Ball, and Katz, thanks to all three of you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Up next, more on what's happening inside Stateville. Stay with us. While transfers out of Illinois' closing Stateville Correctional Facility are already underway, there is an ongoing effort to be released from prison entirely and sooner than some sentences require. Advocates are working to bring back a widespread parole system in Illinois since, and most people don't know this, the state is one of 16 that don't have one. Efforts to return to that system are starting from behind prison walls.
At 46 years old, Raul Dorado is 26 years into a life sentence at Stateville Correctional Facility.
To the unutterable ignorance of dark, cold caves.
But that hasn't stopped him from learning or fighting against what he believes to be an inhumane system of mass incarceration.
All of us who formed this nonprofit, we all either had a life without parole sentence or we had a de facto life sentence. Or virtual life, which means that you have so much time that you can't outlive your sentence.
The nonprofit he's referring to is called Parole Illinois, formed by men who are incarcerated in state prisons. They're working to reinstate the parole system after it was abolished in Illinois in 1978.
It's just so inhumane to require people to grow old and infirm, to have to die in prison, when we got literally mountains of data to inform us that lengthy prison sentences yield nominal returns on public safety.
Here's how it works. Current Illinois law calls for determinate sentencing. That means if a defendant is sentenced to serve 6 years, they serve the entire 6 years. They can shave time off that sentence for good behavior and by participating in classes and training. Once that time is earned, they're released from prison on mandatory supervised release, or MSR, where they still have to follow plenty of rules and check in with a supervising officer regularly. That part is still very similar to parole. But the difference is the mechanism for release from prison. Under parole, once a defendant has served a certain amount of time in prison, they can make their case to the parole board. Raul Dorado and other advocates refer to it as earned reentry.
What we're proposing is not a get-out-of-jail card. We're advancing an earned reentry bill, and it requires people to spend 20 or more consecutive years in prison before they're eligible. And it's a review process, right? After 20 years, you can present the best version of yourself before the Illinois Prisoner Review Board, and it'll be up to them to determine whether you can be safely released and successfully reintegrate into society.
Their earned reentry bills, House Bill 3373 and Senate Bill 2129, create a review process that after 20 to 35 consecutive years of incarceration, individuals are given the chance to make their case before the parole board. The Illinois Sentencing Policy Advisory Council shows that as the bills are written, 438 people in IDOC prisons would be eligible for release in the first year of effectiveness. That number would grow to nearly 4,000 by the third year. Republican State Senator Seth Lewis isn't opposed to the idea of bringing back parole, but questions if it should be a priority for IDOC.
That whole system needs to be improved before we go wholeheartedly into a parole system. It has to come together, because giving someone the opportunity to leave prison and then not support them while they're here, I think we're setting them up for failure to go back.
He argues the whole system needs other cures for long-running ills, like root causes of crime and rehabilitation while incarcerated.
And we also have to bring in victims and victims' families, making sure that they're felt a part of the process, or at least have a say. they may not like the outcome of a person who has been rehabilitated and not want to provide forgiveness. But at the same time, they need to be a part of it.
One such victim was 11-year-old Jaden Perkins, a young dancer killed while protecting his mother from a man just released from prison on mandatory supervised release. Dorado argues the public misuse of the word parole in the case of the suspect hurts their efforts.
This man was not on parole. He was an MSR. If there was a parole system, he would have been forced to undergo this transformational process of personal growth before he would have been released.
Advocate Shaniva McReynolds is a victim herself. Her first husband was murdered 16 years ago. A suspect was never arrested.
Whomever it is that is responsible for my late husband's death, I don't think they need to sit in prison for 30, 40 years just to realize what they did or caused to my family, but also it's not going to make their family whole either, right? It's going to tear their family apart the same way it's torn mine apart. How can we not advocate for second chances when we know that human beings by nature do change?
She married her current husband while he was incarcerated in an unrelated federal case.
He was convicted and sentenced to 20 years to life.
For a nonviolent drug offense
in the federal system, albeit. So he would have had to serve all that time. He technically should not be home until 2029.
But he's out of prison now through a change in federal law. McReynolds argues a change in state law could do the same for men and women in Illinois, providing opportunities like the ones she and her husband have now.
And while we fight to reinstate a parole system in Illinois.
In the meantime, Raul Dorado spends his time preparing for the day he gets his chance.
I've undergone that transformational personal growth, and I gladly carry this heavy burden that I know that I don't just speak for myself. I speak for every incarcerated person in IDOC, and I particularly speak on behalf of every person of more than 5,000 people who are sentenced to die in Illinois prisons.
Also, Raul Dorado himself was just transferred to a downstate prison yesterday. Shaniva McReynolds also points out how a parole system would create a safety valve for the wrongfully incarcerated. If released on parole, they could continue fighting their cases on the outside and serve far less time while in prison. Up next, a look at Negro League's commemorative coins. Stay with us. The Negro Leagues were in the spotlight back in May when player statistics were officially merged with Major League Baseball's record books. And the historic Black League is once again being featured, this time in an exhibit at the Federal Reserve Bank's Museum in Chicago. The exhibit showcases a series of coins that were made by the U.S. Mint to commemorate the 100th anniversary of the founding of the league. We stopped by and spoke with a Black baseball historian who walked us through the exhibit.
The level of accomplishment that went into not only securing these objects, which I certainly found fascinating, and looking at them from the vantage point of the contribution that they make not only to the city of Chicago, but also Black baseball in particular. In general, what they symbolize for me is the role of recognition that is given to Black baseball in the commemoration of these beautiful coins. More specifically, it allows us to peer into the life of Black baseball as it was played in the city of Chicago with Andrew Rube Foster, who is certainly considered the father of Black baseball. Well, the coin that I'm especially fascinated with is the one with the bus on it. Certainly a tribute to the mobility, flexibility and comfort that was provided for Black baseball teams at a time when Jim Crow was rather rampant. It appears to have been a coincidence that this exhibit was launched at this time, which definitely parallels and intersects with the integration of Negro League baseball statistics into the Major League Baseball statistics. It's a huge moment, certainly, and there have been baseball historians certainly before me for decades that have been working on this project, and it's finally come to fruition, and it's certainly well-deserved.
The exhibit is on display at the Chicago Fed's Money Museum through April 2025. And that's our show for this Wednesday night. Be sure to subscribe to our newsletter, The Daily Chicagoan, at WTTW.com/newsletter. And while you're there, check out our website for the very latest from WTTW News. And never miss Chicago Tonight. You can stream us on Facebook, YouTube, and our website. And join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and 10. We break down presidential candidates' plans for immigration reform and what's outlined in Project 2025. Plus, amid major food recalls, a look at what's being done to help people access food locally. Now, for all of us here at Chicago Tonight, I'm Brandis Friedman. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy and safe, and have a good night.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that is proud to give back to its community in Chicago and beyond.